This week on Vox Talks, does social media polarise our opinions? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In recent years, it seems like we've seen a rise in extreme political views. But is social media responsible for polarising opinion? Or is it helping us to see the other side of the argument? A new paper uses an innovative model to analyse how polarisation can emerge in networks when we both consume and spread the news. Well, joining me today is one of the authors, Yves Zenou of Monash University, who is also a CEPR Fellow. Yves, welcome to Vox Talks.
Thank you for having me here.
I asked the question about whether social media is polarising opinion or not, and it seems that there's a lot of arguments on both sides.
Yeah, indeed. Research in economics show, on the one side, social media has increased political polarisation, because it's created the echo chambers where individuals only listen or are exposed to like-minded views. So they just reinforce their own prejudice. That's one side of the story. The other side is that you are exposed to much more news and people that you don't know very closely, that we call weak ties. And because you are exposed to a much larger networks, such as your direct friends, then you are exposed also to alternative political views through these weak ties, and then less likely to hold extreme political opinion. So you have these two aspects. Clearly, it's difficult to see which one dominates the other one.
It is tempting to say, well, you know, they both can't be right. But you point out that there's a common flaw in this research, in that it assumes we just consume social media, when, of course, we also spread it as well. So if you take into account the idea that we're generating and consuming social media, what difference might that make?
Yes, so because basically this research don't look at what we call general equilibrium effects. So basically, for example, they say, okay, people, for example, who use social media the least, so people who are over 60 years old, tend to be much more polarized than others. But of course, they don't look at the whole market effect. If you are more polarized, then you tend to tweet or to give advice on your own opinion, but other people also influence. And then people who are younger may be influenced by the over 60-year-olds. So if you look at the whole market, then the effect is not as obvious as that. And I think that what matters is, of course, polarization, but also homophily, and how people and how they listen to other people.
You separate popularity from polarization. Can you explain how you model the popularity of niche and mainstream news?
Yes, so basically our model, we try to understand how network structure affects the propagation of content of social media. And we look at two types of news, the mainstream news, which, you know, for example, in the US would be CNN and kind of news, and the niche news, which is more extreme news, who try to push their own agenda. By doing so, we look how the networks and how people retweet what they do. What we show basically is that if the network, of course, is very sparse, then obviously the mainstream news is going to survive and the niche one going to disappear. So the popularity of the niche market is going to be sustained only if there is enough people pushing for it, because naturally you're going to be swamped by the mainstream news. For the niche market to sustain in equilibrium, you need either to have a very dense market, or you need people to be very, very homophilous. So just to look at news that are like-minded.
And is that how the model manages to accommodate the idea that a lot of extreme news of any type is very clickbaity? It's designed to make people want to spread it and look at it. Whereas a lot of mainstream news can be a little bit boring sometimes.
Yes, that is totally true. There's a big debate, talking about clickbaiting, about ASAP Rocky.
Yes.
I'm originally from Sweden, so he's been arrested in Sweden. And there's a lot of Twitter and people just tweeting about ASAP Rocky, taking both sides. On one side, they say, oh, he's a violent guy. He's been hitting this poor guy. On the other side, he's a victim because they were racist. So you have these two things. And of course, you're going to get all this news. And the question you're going to make your opinion based on Twitter you're going to receive, on the tweet you're going to receive. And if you only share news with people like you, maybe you're going to end up with the same view. But if you are on a big social media, maybe Facebook and Twitter, maybe you're going to get much more exposed to new news. And this is what our models say, is that it depends how homophilous you are and how dense is the network. And you have these two effects. If the network is very dense, so you're more likely to be exposed to other type of news. Because, you know, there's so many people around you and with so many tweets. But if you are very homophilous and only look at people who think like you, then maybe you're going to be less exposed to the other news.
And in the model, you model the polarization effect separately from this exposure. So how does that work?
So basically, the way we define polarization is to measure the difference between the type of content consumed across a niche and the mass market person. So you see the difference in consumption. Because, you know, you're born with a type. You're born being a niche guy or a mass market. But then you're exposed to different news and you decide yourself which news you want to tweet and which one you want to keep. So basically, what we show is that in order to have polarization, you need to have some homophily. If there's no homophily, clearly the mainstream news will stay and there will be no polarization. What we show is that, as I said before, denser networks, so more exposure to people, will allow the niche to survive, and that will drive polarization. That's important. So, and there's these two effects. On the one hand, denser networks will have polarization. On the other hand, denser network, we also have people to have more diverse news. And this is a trade-off that we try to model. So it's good to have dense network to be exposed to a lot of news, but you are on the one side more polarized, and on the other side, you get greater variety of contents.
And there's a final set of results, which I found very interesting, because then you throw in what you call lobbying agents in the model. I suppose, tell me if I'm wrong, these would be trolls, or they might be conspiracy theorists, or maybe agents for foreign government. How do they affect the community and the polarization that we see?
Yeah, so lobbyists is, as you say, conspiracy theorists. It could be so for people, if you think about environment issues, people who just believe that humans are not causing the climate change, for example. They try to push their own agenda. So in our model, what we show actually is that lobbying can increase polarization. So in the model, you have different lobbying agents. You have two of them. One who try to influence the mainstream, one the niche one. And of course, what we show is that the lobbying agent which favors the niche content will invest much more in lobbying activities than the other one. Because he's in minority, so he's put much more effort on that. And because of that, he will tend to increase polarization. This is good or bad, I don't know, but people's going to be much more polarized. So imagine you believe that the environment is not due to human factors, and then you have this lobbying one try to push you so that you're going to be more likely to believe in that.
I suppose what that means is that if you are one of these lobbying agents, then social media can be a very successful place in which you can operate.
Exactly. And think of what we used to do 20 years ago. So we had only newspaper. So basically, okay, if you were like more left-wing, maybe you're going to read The Guardian, and maybe more right-wing, going to read The Sun, and then you will not change your opinion because you're going to look like-minded type of newspaper. However, today, the good thing with social media and also the bad thing, the good thing is that you are exposed to news from people you never heard of. Then, of course, you'll be exposed to news from people you don't hang out with, and that's a good thing of social media. Of course, the bad thing is that you have the lobbying agent who try to push their agenda and convince you that they're right. That is a trade-off we have in mind.
This is a theoretical model that you've created here. Is there any way to test it empirically, or is it just a case of, well, look what's going on around us?
Yes, that's a good point. Actually, yes, I think we can test it empirically. One way to do it would be to see, for example, across time, as networks become denser, do people change their political opinion? So, for example, we could test that with Twitter to see if generally the Twitter networks become denser, do people are more exposed to diverse news and change their opinions. I was thinking about an example that I read from a book where people were looking at congressmen in the US, and they were looking in the 50s. And in the 50s, 80% of the bill voted by the congressman were voted by both Democrat and Republican. Today, we see a divide, and only 50% of the bill are voted by both of them, meaning that 50% of the bills are totally polarized. And you see this increase in that. And the question is that, is it due to the fact that we have more dancer networks? Is it due to the fact that we have more homophily among the congressmen? This is basically what the model is trying to do. And it would be very interesting to be able to test that.
Ah, I see. So the model doesn't have to be a social network. It can be other types of networks as well.
Of course, yeah. It could be any network, any links between people and people forming opinions and are influenced by their neighbor and the people they are linked to.
If Twitter or other social networks, that if they're listening to Vox Talks, I assume that they do, is there anything that they could do to make their networks more pro-social? Because they're constantly being criticized about this and there's not an obvious solution.
Yeah, no, it's clear there's no obvious solution. What we show, I mean, if you look at our model, we show that banning extreme view can reduce polarization, but can also reduce variety. So, and I think I know Facebook and all these social media try to do that, that when you have someone with extreme and of extreme opinion, try to ban them and to stop them from tweeting or for putting some news. But at the same time, of course, you are less exposed to variety, so you have to be very careful with that. It's again the trade-off between polarization and variety. You know, you want people to get exposed to many, many news and to make their own opinions, but at the same time, you're afraid of this extreme fake news that can reach other people. So this is a balance, I guess, you have when you do this kind of policy.
Now, while a lot of social networks do take some criticism for the way that they operate, economics Twitter, generally speaking, seems to be a fairly positive, non-polarized place. Based on your model, why is that happening?
I think, yes, it's an interesting point. I am on economics Twitter, and usually it's mostly academic or people from academia which are tweeting.
Mm.
So my feeling is that economics Twitter people are more exposed to variety and are more used to critics. I mean, when you write papers, people criticize you. So there's more debate about that. But again, if I go back to the model, it's again this trade-off that I told you before between variety and polarization. You know, I think economic Twitter people are exposed to more variety and they get less polarized and they accept more debating about that. And just to go back to what we say is that, again, this trade-off between polarization and variety is really about network density versus homophily in our model. This is a counterpart of these two aspects. This is what is important to understand here.
It's a good example of how social media can produce good results sometimes, isn't it? Sometimes it can be quite encouraging. Eve, thank you very much.
Yes, it was great talking to you, Tim.
So whether your opinions are niche or mainstream, we're always looking forward to engaging with your tweets on this topic. As I am sure, does Eve Zanu 1, that's you on Twitter, isn't it, Eve?
Yes, exactly.
The paper we've been discussing is called Social Media and Polarization, and the authors are Arthur Campbell, Matthew Leister, and Eve Zanu, and it is DP13860. Eve, you are going to be following this up, are you?
Of course, yeah. Yes.
We look forward to that. Eve, thank you very much. Next week on Vox Talks, how are British businesses responding to the challenge of Brexit?
You're looking at FDI trends. Is there any evidence that we are grasping the opportunity of global Britain?
No.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. For more in the series, subscribe on your podcast platform or check out voxeu.org/vox-talks.